everyone must eat, and most everyone must buy the food they eat from others. Though anyone can grow and process and sell that food, the business has become dominated by relatively few big businesses, and that leads us to ask, can the food chain be decolonized?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1135th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Fremantle who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Griffin Queener on the boards, producer Sarah Bell Lynn on the stories. Folks, there are 7.5 billion hungry people living here on planet Earth. Some of those people still have the wherewithal to grow or hunt down their own food. But a good many of us can't feed ourselves and so must buy the food we eat from others. The business of growing, processing, and selling food has become dominated by relatively very few big businesses. Those who want to grow their way into the business must find some way to compete with those who have become big enough to control and dominate the marketplace. Today we are going to talk with folks who are looking for a way to fight their way into the business of food by decolonizing the food chain. So pull up your chair, grab a cup of coffee, and get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio. And as we ask today, can the food chain, the food system that feeds billions of people, be decolonized? Well, joining us today from the EcoFarm Conference in Pacific Grove, California, we have anthropologist Dr. Gail Myers, who is the founder of Farms to Grow and in Oakland, California. And we also have Farmer Will Scott, Scott Valley Farms in Fresno, California. We want to thank you both for joining us today. Dr. Myers, we'll start with you, an anthropologist, right?
Yes, cultural anthropologist.
From Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. I ended up at the Ohio State University.
Mm-hmm. And from there to Oakland?
Well, actually, I went back to the Atlanta, Georgia area where I got my master's from Georgia State University with the intention of getting into community and talking about sustainable agriculture, because that was the approach that I had looked at when I was doing my doctorate work at The Ohio State University. Got to Atlanta in 2002, and there were not that many people even thinking about what sustainable ag was. So I ended up coming to California and the San Francisco Bay Area and found that mostly everybody in this area was talking about sustainable agriculture. And so I ended up planting roots here, so to speak, and co-founded the organization Farms to Grow and began to meet people like Mr. Will Scott.
Mm-hmm. What was the epiphany that led you into sustainable agriculture back there in the Midwest, Ohio, Georgia?
Wow.
Places that, you know, probably weren't, as you said, weren't thinking about it, but probably are now. But what was the, do you remember that moment the apple fell on your head?
Absolutely. It was a circuitous kind of process because I, as most anthropologists, went to Ohio State to go to a foreign country to study the other. So my foreign country was going to be Ecuador. I was going to study the Shota people. The first week of my graduate school, I had a conversation with my advisor who was working with Amish farmers in Ohio and had been doing work as part of his graduate research for Japanese farmers. So we were talking about farmers, and the subject of black farmers came up. And this was early September 1997, and I had to defer to the answer as the question came up. I really don't know what's happening with black farmers. And so after that question, I went to the library immediately, feeling embarrassed and like, how are you the only African-American in the department not knowing anything about African-American farmers? So I left the department, went to the library, did a lit search, and it was the beginning of the Pigford versus Glickman litigation.
Oh, yeah. Would you?
Class action suit. Yeah, it was a class action. It was very early days of that. There was a class action of about 12,000 African-American farmers who were claiming years of discrimination. So I had sort of a head-scratching moment, like, what is this going on here? Began to sort of interview folks and decided, I guess about 3 months after my initial week with my advisor, that I was probably not going to Ecuador. I was going to work with African-American farmers and didn't figure I'd even go to the South to do that. Until I discovered that there were African-American farmers in Ohio. What happened is I'm in the field going about my field work, asking questions to farmers, and everything that they're talking about, things like crop rotation, composting, preservation of a forest, biodynamic farming, the textbooks were speaking of those as sustainable agriculture and biodynamic farmers, farming. The farmers that I was talking to were calling it natural. You know, I threw some terms out at them. I said, is this sustainable farming? They said, oh, this is natural farming. I threw some stuff out at them about biodynamic. Oh, I just plant by the size of the moon, you know, the lunar farming. So it just sort of like occurred to me that there was no mention of Mr. Scott or, you know, that before I knew Mr. Scott or people like Mr. Scott. I was interviewing farmers, Mr. Randolph, Mr. Polk, who were planting by the size of the moon, keeping a forest, you know, in the most pristine ways in which we know sustainable agriculture, but they were not noticed and referenced at all. So as I began to go back and convey this information to my advisors, they really did not believe me. They were thinking, well, you know, I'm sure that's not what they meant. But there was this, you know, moment of disbelief, and it sort of carried itself throughout my term there.
So well, let's, you know, Dr. Myers, before we go on, let's introduce this Mr. Scott, this Mr. Will Scott Jr. Mr. Will Scott, your family's been farming for quite a while, right? Or do we have Mr. Scott? Maybe we don't have Mr. Scott. I guess we don't. He was talking about maybe not being able to hold on for a long time, so maybe we lost him. But have you, Dr. Myers, introduced Mr. Scott for us?
Absolutely. I met Mr. Scott through my short-term consulting opportunity that I had when I first got into the Bay Area with David Roach and an organization that they had called Mo Better Foods. They had a small farmers market, but they wanted to expand. And so when I got into the Bay Area, I introduced myself to David, and he said, you know, we need help with
hello.
It's finance.
Oh, there he is. We have Mr.
Awesome.
Scott.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the first people that I met in doing this research was Mr. Will Scott.
Hello, Mr. Will Scott.
We've been working together.
Yeah, I lost connection. I can hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
Oh, good. Well, it's good to have you back. Mr. Will Scott, your family's been farming for quite a while in the Fresno, California area, right?
Well, to an extent, what happened is that, you know, like I said, a little bit of my history is that, you know, we came out of Oklahoma, you know, and my parents was, they call it sharecropping, and that's just my grandfather and then my father, and I had a little taste of that. But we come to California, you know, and naturally to survive, you know, we did farm work. And I actually got into farming full time is when, you know, when I got out of service, I bought 5 acres, you know, and I started, you know, doing the weed abatement, you know, keeping the weeds down. So then I started planting stuff, you know, and then for the family and the people in the neighborhood liked it also. So I kind of started, you know, farming that way. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, in our culture, you know, we, because of the stigma of slavery, as it pertained to farming, you know, we were told to get an education and get as far away from it as you can, you know. Because
that's what I was told, too, by the way.
Exactly. You know, you need to get an education, get some money so you can take care of your family, you know.
Right.
Well, Well, you know, is that, and, you know, not to get too spiritual, but, you know, each one of us put on this earth, we have a mission here. We're supposed to do something, you know, and I guess as soon as you find out about it, you need to go about your business. But, you know, this farming, I guess it was in my DNA because I did go on to get an education, went into service, you know, came out, worked as an engineer for a telephone company, but that was something that was pulling me back to the land, you know.
Well, can you hold that, Mr. Will Scott? We're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, I want to hear what pulled you back to the farm, to the land, and it seems like what pulled Dr. Gail Myers back as well. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about the possible decolonization of agriculture, the food chain. Is it possible to put people back on the land? Do stay tuned. We will be right back after these important messages.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro Farm it. You can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it. Build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy. You can do it. Metro Farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking with two very interesting people, Dr. Gail Myers, the founder of Farms to Grow in Oakland, California, Will Scott Jr. of Scott Valley Farms in Fresno, California, and you, of course. This is a pre-recorded show, so you're not able to call in, but you can always participate on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com, talking about what calls us back to the land. Will Scott was in the service. Were you a sailor or a soldier?
A sailor.
A sailor. Me too. Good for you.
Yeah, I was submarines. I was a technician on a submarine.
Wow.
Conventional sub, yeah.
Now, I don't know if anybody realizes what that meant, but I know, and I was on an aircraft carrier, which was significantly bigger than a little cigar tube under the water. How you did that, I don't know. So, but I can understand after having served on a submarine that you would come to appreciate the land. And what was it that called you back to the land, Will?
Well, actually, you know, it's like I said, you know, being from the country, you know, I like that open space. But actually what really drew me back to it is that when I was doing stuff for myself and other people enjoyed it, you know, then I realized something too is that there was something missing in the community as far as people having availability of fresh fruit. Even though I'm from the San Joaquin Valley, you know, there are people here, you know, who they call them food deserts that didn't have exposure to it. So it kind of drew me back, you know, and then I found out something too is that, you know, we are from the earth. So there was something spiritual to me about it that I enjoy working with the soil. You know, and it was amazing to be able to, you know, repair your land, put a seed in, and then you watch it come to life, and then you take care of it, and then you're able to process, you know, to harvest it, and then, you know, somebody enjoy eating it, you know, and you are fulfilling, you know, a mission. So, you know, as I got into this, you know, you know, people started, you know, asking for more, and then I think Gail mentioned about the lawsuit that was applied, you know, went against the USDA as far as unfair treatment. Well, that lawsuit that was passed in the South made all the farmers, black farmers in the United States, privy to that suit. So that's how I got into it. And then when we formed a 501(c) organization called the Afro-American Farmers of California, well, people heard about us, you know, because in California, whether you know it, is that we have almost 80,000 farmers in California, but there's only probably a little over 500 African Americans. So you're looking at less than 0.5%, you know, as far as being involved in the business.
Can you hold that for just a second? Let me go to Dr. Gail Myers. Dr. Gail, why so few African American farmers in a state of agriculture like California?
Well, I think the state hasn't really given any real focus on the what has been called socially disadvantaged farmers, which African American farmers and Latino and Native American farmers and women also fall in that category. We've just been trying to sort of fight the fight with the Goliath and haven't really had the resources, for one. And not being able to participate in the markets has been, really been the pin that sort of bust the balloon, because which is one of the reasons we started the Freedom Farmers Market. You can grow it, but if you don't have anything to someone to buy it or a market to take it to, then it's very difficult. So there have been a lot of challenges, not enough resources to support our farmers.
Well, what captured me about the two of you was a notice that you would be giving a presentation at EcoFarm about decolonizing the food system. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Decolonizing, what a name. What exactly do you mean, Dr. Myers, by decolonizing? What was it colonized? What colonized it in the first place, I guess?
Well, yes, I think, mentioning the corporatization of food, yes, that is somewhat of a colonized model where you have folks that have always had the control of the resources continuing to have the lion's share of the decision-making and the resource accumulation. But, the same thing that really is what called me is this notion of decolonizing the food system. When I found out about farmers and the African-American farmers and out there in the field with them, I felt like I was reclaiming a part of myself that I didn't even know was there.
What do you mean by that?
Well,
so are you referring to the same thing that Will was talking about with respect to that spiritual connection?
Awareness. Well, I grew up in Daytona Beach. So I grew up on the beach, and after the age of 14, when I realized I could ride my bike there, I was on the beach almost every day until I left to go to college. And so my relationship with the land was more of a fluid one, excuse the pun, but I've always been around nature. It has been what has grounded me. And so when I began working with African-American farmers and out there on the land and in the forest, I began to reclaim another part of me, which is that farming part of my past. I began to ask questions of my relatives and find out more about the farmers in my family from Alabama. So reclaimed a part of who I was and my identity, and helping to give more visibility to farmers that were invisible. It also felt like a piece of saving, a piece of history, and a piece of resistance. So for me, the decolonization is almost like fetching back. We use the Sankofa bird as an emblem in our Freedom Farmers Market literature. And it really is sort of captures the idea we have about, just for starters, decolonization is reaching back to reclaim your roots, your history, your community knowledge, so that you can move forward. And so those are just a few things.
Will, with respect to your working with the community, you talked about how, people buy the food from you and they get to taste the freshness and the quality of that food. And do you think that is the way that they are also reclaiming their ties to the soil through you?
Well, that's true, too. And I think that, people, like I say, our people, we got as far away from agriculture as I call it farming, but we use a new term now, agriculture. But because of the attachment to slavery, when you use the term farm, but people now, they begin to realize their history. And they know that some of the produce that they consume in that time that, built them up, gave them the strength to work those 10 and 12 hours a day. They like to go back to that day, too, because those things was healthy for them. So there's an awareness now that, you know, we kind of like to, I think Gail used the term circle back, you know, and try to recapture, you know, some of the things that we had, like you say, in the good old days. But I think, too, is that, you know, I wanted to clear, too, that as a farmer, when I got back to farming, you know, it was some obstacle, too, because first of all is that the ownership of land was prohibited. You know that even in California, if you'll find out that California probably had more Jim Crow laws on the book than Mississippi. So, you know, that was a deterrent there. And then you tie that to the fact that we was told to get away from farming to get your education. So that kind of, the two together kind of, you know, limit us as far as being exposed to the ownership of land. But I can say this, is that when I got back into farming, you know, I ran into some obstacles. One of them was that I found out I can grow this stuff, but if you grow it, you have to have a place for it to go. That's the marketing end of this. And that's where Professor David Roach came in and from the Bay Area, Jabari from Southern California, Los Angeles, you know, and then Gail took over for Professor Roach. You know, and that was, to me, that was a godsend, because first of all is that we need to make that connection between the city and the county, you know, and people in the country, you know, as far as being able to make close that loop and have a place for your vegetable crops to go to.
Well, we're going to take a quick break right now, Will and Dr. Myers. When we come back, we want to talk about how we're making the connection, how we're decolonizing the food system by connecting the city and the country, or the city and the farm, city folks and farm folks. We all have the same need, and that is for good, clean food and work. We do stay tuned. We will be right back after these important messages. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Will Scott Jr. and Gail Myers, Dr. Gail Myers, and you. Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Today we're talking about decolonizing the food chain. What does that mean exactly, decolonizing? Well, it means taking back access to the farm, to the soil, to the food, both for the purpose of farming and, of course, for the purpose of eating. We're hungry for the good stuff. How do we get it? We get it from people who are growing it for us. And so one of those people would be Will Scott from Scott Family Farms in Fresno, California. And making that connection would be Dr. Gail Myers, who's the founder of Farms to Grow. So that's step number one, is in decolonizing the food chain, as it were, is to make a direct connection, right, Dr. Myers?
Absolutely. Which is the value of what Mr. Scott's work is, and other farmers that are growing our, what we call our legacy foods, like our okra and our black-eyed peas and purple hull peas. A lot of folks that live in Oakland are from Mississippi and from Alabama, and they're from the country, but somehow they get to the urban center and they don't have access to their food. So we're bringing back that connection, which sits really at the intersection of a spiritual healing, a physical healing. And the best part about it is that you get to see who grows your food, relationships with people like Mr. Scott.
Food with its farmer's face on it, right?
That's right. That's right. You know that. And so that connection right there really adds to the quality of the food experience and the quality of the community experience. So there's a couple of ways at which we are connected by decolonizing our food. We're actually bringing back a healing through of food, because if we bring back a lot of the traditional foods that many of the folks, when they came here from the African continent and other places, if that food is part of the normal diet repertoire, that's the food that can heal. The food that keeps people living to 90 and 100. My great aunt just recently passed earlier this year, 104. She had her own garden up until she was 90s. And the doctor forced someone to take it out because they were afraid that she would fall. Part of how she stayed so healthy is she grew okra, her black-eyed peas, her sweet potatoes. She had her own chickens. She was so close to the land. And we get our needs met by being so close to the land.
Not just nutritional needs either, right, Will Scott? There's something else there that's healing too, isn't there, Will?
That's true, too. You know, like I say, we have a connection, because if you, you know, if you if you're spiritual, you know that we came from the earth. You know, so there's a attraction there, and also there's a relationship there. But also, too, is that, you know, God gave us a unique system, you know, as far as what we need in order to sustain us, Dev, and it comes from the, you know, the food that's made available to us, you know, in the idea of plants and such. You know, and I think Gail alluded to it, too, because, you know, is that African people are actually plant eaters. You know, they're not necessarily meat eaters. So, you know, stuff that we grow on the farm, you know, is really relevant to us sustaining ourselves, not only physically, but spiritually, you know, and then that connection comes in. And well, I like to say this, too, before I have to go, is that, you know, as a farmer, you know, we should do what we do best, and that's farm. But nowadays, you know, a farmer has to be a multitude of entities. You know, not only do he's a grower, but he also has to be, the bottom line, he has to be a business person. Mm-hmm. You know, so he has to be able to, you know, find a place for his product to go even before he plant it. So that's where, you know, that I've been blessed that I met Jabari, Professor Roach, and then also Gail. You know, working with Gail now is that I laugh sometimes, too. Sometimes a man starts something, but it takes a woman to finish it, you know. So she's done a tremendous job as far as making that other connection because, you know, even though we're in the farmer's market, I go to farmer's market every Saturday out there where she's has managed, is that also it exposed me to people who will buy for me, you know, wholesale or whatever, while I'm on the farm. So that's been a godsend.
Well, wait a minute, Will, because it's not just Dr. Myers making the connection with you. You had to make the connection with her as well. That's a two-way street, right?
Oh, yeah, because like I said, is that what she's doing, you know, in the cities, you know, is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff there because there are some unfulfilled needs to people out there because, as you know, we as a people, you know, we suffer probably the heaviest from high blood pressure, diabetes, and those other things associated with the food that we consume.
Is that from going away from your traditional diet of plants? You just mentioned that your traditional diet was largely plant based and a little bit of meat, but not a lot of meat. Is you know, the problems, the physical problems of the inner city related to, you know, losing that diet?
Well, yeah, that's true, and also too is that, you know, when you're in a situation, you know, you kind of conform to your environment. So, you know, if you're in an environment where meat is consumed, you know, you sooner or later you're gonna drift towards that area too. And that's not only, you know, physical, but that's spiritualized too. But I think that we educate people because, like Gail alluded to, we have people that who lives it to be in their hundreds. You know, and the reason that we don't is because, you know, the food that we eat, you know, and the stuff that is in it, you know, has a lot to contribute to, you know, us suffering from the you know, the high blood pressure and also cancer and stuff. So the closer you get to eating food naturally, you know, the healthier you're going to be.
And the closer you get to the ground, the better off you're going to be. And the closer you get to Will Scott's farm, the better off you're going to be. I wish I could be there eating from your farm right now. Thank you so much for joining us, Will. I know we have to lose you right now, but really appreciate you joining us today. And is there a way for people to tune in with you? You have a website or anything?
My son put up one from his Scott Family Farm, but we're still working on it, but they can also pull it up, you know, and they can see some of the stuff that we're going. And I'm supposed to be updated, you know, shortly. But, you know, right now is that, you know, I went through some difficulties, you know, and when you're farming, you know, if Father Time doesn't deal with you, then Mother Nature will. So in the San Joaquin Valley, you know, we're in California, period, we're having a drought situation. So the wells in the valley down here, you know, it was drastic because I had two wells that went dry.
Oof.
You know, and people, you know, they heard about it. I mean, that's why I say that, you know, it's really it's some nice people out there. So they come forward, you know, and they, you know, I have water now. So this year I should be pretty close to full production. I can be able to produce more of those crops that, you know, that we people are asking for.
That everybody's hungry for. So do you just do one farmer's market or do you more? Or how do you work that?
I just do one because I was spreading myself too thin because, you know, as the president of an organization, you know, and then you're doing stuff in the community, you kind of spread yourself too thin. And then, you know, you really don't do justice to, you know, maybe to one or two. And that's like growing products. You know, I go to the farmer's market. I have to, you know, be able to grow a lot of stuff. If we don't have some other farmers to participate, then that's a dilemma that we have, is because we do not have that many African-American farmers in order to address the need that we have in the inner cities.
Well, Doctor, Will Scott, want to thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break here, but I suspect we'll lose you. You have to go off to the dentist, but good luck on that. But thank you so much for going back to the land, growing food, and doing the one thing that we all need.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. We just lost our connection with Will Scott Jr. of Scott Family Farms in Fresno, California. What a wonderful man, Dr. Myers. Must have been a wonderful experience discovering him, right?
It has just been a wonderful experience discovering farmers in general. I think of all the occupations that we have on the planet, farmers are by far just the most loving and just generous and most wonderful people as a group that I've met. But I'd like to go back to a question that you asked, Scott, about recovering memory, healing. What I have seen, Michael, is that the food, when you get introduced, and I use myself as an example, when I am introduced or reintroduced to a traditional food, I recover a part of my memory, and it helps me to heal. It helps me to heal a piece of myself and community that's gotten stuck with this narrative around we don't belong in the land. That's not our place. And so when I eat the food from the farmers that I know, I'm recovering a memory, and it encourages me to want to go back to land. Since I've been working with the farmers, I've started a garden. So for about 6 years, I've been an urban gardener because I want to grow food, too. I want to be a part of this approach of feeding community and sort of decolonizing my own world, because it's a community approach.
You know,
it's amazing.
Will Scott brought up an interesting point. He talked about how, you know, as a young man, he was encouraged to go out and get an education and go away from the farm, go away, go away, go away. And, you know, for generations, we were pretty much shooed off the land into the cities, corralled by big cities and taken off the land. And that land was, the production was industrialized. So instead of having people like Will Scott out there growing food for us, we used money instead. And with that money, we bought equipment, we bought chemicals. And so now, you know, you look at the heartland of the country, and it's pretty much one person growing thousands of acres of crops with chemicals and machinery, and there's nobody there.
Right.
So, and you talk about decolonizing that. It mm-hmm. would seem to me like it's going to take some aggression, some astute competition, if you will, to decolonize. How are we going to do that?
Yeah, it's a long-term race, Michael. It didn't definitely happen overnight. But one of the things that can happen, and that I'm encouraged by this work, is when you get people to open their mind to the possibility of a connection to land and a relationship to land, so many other possibilities open for them. Forgetting about shame, you know, freeing yourself from regret, freeing yourself from isolation. You know, it really is something that is very transformative. So the way that we do it is that we start with kids in Head Start. We get them interested in the land, farming, growing, feeding them, letting them taste good food. Then we move up to the various ages. And then we do the work with the farmer to make sure that they're able to come into the community and have food that's a legacy food. So it's an interesting relationship because we go back to history. We start out, we go from the past, and we keep the young involved. But when you introduce food that, in the African-American case in this in the United States, food that actually came into this country through the braided hair of the women, they put seeds in their hair. And to go away from that food, you've been separated. So what we want to do is bring back that connection to people and the food and the land. And I think that if we get people, you know, used to seeing farmers, used to seeing fresh food, the expectation that it should be healthy, we're going to look at the purveyors of this bad food. Industrialized farming is ruining the environment. And so a lot of the work that we do in the work of decolonization is looking at the intersections of the environment, food, water, you know, wildlife, labor, because they're all involved in this thing, this system that feeds us.
I always thought, Dr. Myers, that if you want to decolonize the food system, all you would need do is make everything cost what it really costs. If you did that, I don't think industrial agriculture could compete with Will Scott.
You mean lower the prices of the food?
No, I don't think so. I think that if everybody were made to pay the true costs of production, if industrial agriculture had to pay the true costs of labor, of water,
right,
of cleaning up the toxic, you know, waste, if everybody had to pay the true costs of production, I don't think industrial agriculture could compete with the Will Scotts of the world. I don't think so.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. You know, at the same time, though, we have to make food available to everybody.
Then we need more Will Scotts out there growing food, don't we?
And you need more Freedom Farmers Markets, and that's the importance of this work, is to support farmers like Mr. Scott, small farmers that are doing the community work, supporting them with labor, avenues to distribution and all kinds of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So he can keep farming. Yeah. But, you know, there are many cogs in that system. And when you look at the supply chain, you miss some of the value. You know, we've got to look at, you know, we've been talking about, we as in those folks who are sustainable agro growers, trying to hold the food system managers accountable, but you know, we keep getting out of the farm bill, and so there's no support for.
Okay, hold that thought for just a second. We're going to take one last quick break and then come back, and I have a question about those kids that you talk about.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, yeah, so much to talk about, so little time to talk about it. In Dr. Myers was talking about starting with those kids in kindergarten and teaching them about the soil and about the plants and our relation to both. And I got to thinking, how do you do that in competition with commercials on TV that talk about the brightly colored, sugar-coated fun they can get in every box? How do you compete, Dr. Myers?
It's challenging, but I think one of the things that I mentioned before is to have a relationship with the kids. So you have farmers and gardeners out there in the community, in the garden, talking about soil, eating the food. And so that closeness, that proximity, you know, does have some impact, but it's hard to compete with the folks that have studied how to subliminally and all other ways influence the marketing and buying power of consumers. So, yeah, it is a – but, you know, the kids are very truth understanding, and they're truth seekers. And when you talk to them about the importance of keeping the air clean and the soil clean, the importance of everybody eating, the importance of a fair share of a community, they get it. And they want to be a part of that, but you got to start young. And the relationships they build are with the folks that grow their food and may become farmers. What we want, what we do that for, in addition to instilling in the inspiration to eat fresh food, is we want to get new farmers in the pipeline. So we figure out of at least 100 kids that we approach, one or two of them will say, you know, I want to be a farmer. So that's another approach for us to continue to decolonize the system, to put kids in the next, you know, generation who are going to feed us with a community approach in mind.
You know, my wife caught a couple of neighborhood boys stealing fruit from our tree, and she called them up and made their mother come and get them, and had a conversation with their mother, and she told the mother, if your boys want fruit from our tree, you have them come and ask, and I will give them fruit. A couple months later, they show up knocking on the door, can I have some fruit? And so, you know, I took these boys out and I showed them the fruit trees, and we talked about the difference in the fruit trees, and we talked about how to figure out which orange is ripe and which lemon is ripe and such. And you could just tell they were so hungry for the knowledge that, you know, my notion is I could probably make them apprentices to my little fruit orchard in the front yard, and they probably get a kick out of it. And that's what you're doing, isn't it?
Yes, that's what we're doing. Yep. We're reaching back, reclaiming our roots, but we're handing them to the folks that are going to be ahead of us for the next generation. And that's the best that we can do.
And, you know, another thing we can do is we can seek out the Will Scotts of the world and buy their food.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
And we can, you know, talk with our government, too, and suggest that they find ways to make it easier for the Will Scotts of the world to compete in the industrial food system.
Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we are lucky in California. Our governor signed the Farmer Equity Act, AB 1348, which basically recognizes socially disadvantaged farmers. The first is the recognition. What's coming next is some allocation of resources. And so we are hopeful that moving forward, California will have more farmers of color, more farmers like Will Scott.
And there we just ran out of time, but we did it with good news. Thank you so much, anthropologist Dr. Gail Myers. Thank you, Farmer Will Scott. And thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.